but also for Parshas Vayeshev, which is the parsha, of course, of Mechiras Yosef. I would like to give the following introduction. This parsha, like all of the Torah, but perhaps in a more profound sense, can be understood on different levels. On one level, pshat, and all we read about is really the hatred and the jealousy of the brothers against Yosef that led to a situation of great severity in which they plotted to murder him. That's on one level. And for those who want to learn the pshat that way, fine. That's one approach. You have a seat here?
Yeah, I have a seat.
But what I would like to study with you is the approach of Chazal. And I'll mention to you from the outset, before we get to the Sfarno, that according to Tanchuma, the brothers actually convened a Bezdin, a Jewish court. And who presided over that Bezdin? None other than the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. So in the light of that introduction, when we ask the question, how do Chazal understand these parshios on a deeper level, not on the superficial level, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, Bechvodo V'Atzmo, actively involved in the decision to sell Yosef, and we'll soon see the Sfarno, that the final judgment against Yosef, Vayavei Dibasam Royal Avihem, he had the status of a Rodef. A Rodef is someone who's threatening the lives of others. Now, whether you take this to mean their physical lives or their spiritual lives, we'll have to see as we go along. But I think we're going to see a whole nother interpretation of what's going on. And I want you to know, this interpretation on a deeper level is not only going to put Mechiras Yosef in a different light, and the Achim plotting to kill him and sell him, but also Yosef in a different light. Because as we'll soon see, it's very strange that Yosef, having known of the sensitivity with his brothers, the jealousy that was incurred by the fact that he was the favorite of the Yaakov Avinu, he was given the Ksonas Pasim, and yet Yosef, despite this all, insists on relating the Nevuah, the Chalomos, to his brothers, knowing that they hated him. And the Pasuk indicated that he begged them to listen to him. And again, you can understand it on one level, but we're going to try to understand it through the eyes of Chazal. So let's begin with a pasuk in Tehillim. David HaMelech in Tehillim, and you'll see this on the second saucier page, says, Re'u Mifalos Elokim, which is a pasuk in Tehillim Samach Vav, is David's response, David's reaction, with what we call hispalus. That's such a difficult word to translate into English. Hitpalut. Hitpalut means, when you get so excited, so inspired, with great enthusiasm. Look at the wonders of God. This is David's declaration when he sees Mechiras Yosef. Niflos Hashem. Wow. I understand if you go to Gibraltar, you see the different seas that mix together, or you take a trip, if you're in the States, I highly recommend you're going to see Niagara Falls or the Grand Canyon, That's Niflos Habore, and Baruch Hashem, the Niflos Habore all over the earth. But when David HaMelech perceives the Mechiras Yosef episode, and he responds with such espiritus, look at the Niflos Habore. Obviously, we're seeing something on a much deeper level. And therefore, let's start with reading some of the Psukim, and then the second source on your page, the Medrash about David. V'Yisrael Ahavas Yosef Mikol Banav. The Parsha opens up with Yaakov Avinu's very singular love for Yosef. Ki ben zkunim hu lo, and we'll see what that phrase means in a moment. And this is the opening phrase which puts the entire framework, the introduction to Mechiras Yosef, into perspective. Now let's fast forward for a moment to an episode in the middle of Sefer Shmos, one of the greatest moments in the glorious history of Klal Yisrael, and that's Kriyas Yamsuf. Now you can imagine that the Jewish people as one nation would be spared from Yamsuf in one fell swoop. But that's not how the Medrash sees it. The Medrash sees that there was a specific, shall we call it Hatzolah or salvation, times 12 for each one of the Shivtei Kor. And that's called in the Lashon HaMedrash Pasim Pasim. Maybe the same word that we saw before about the Ketonis Pasim, but Pasim Pasim means lines. And the waters rose up and formed 12 different paths, each one respectively for another one of the Shvatim. Reish Lakish, Rav Shim ben Lakish, B'Shem Elazar ben Azariah, L'chu u'ra'u mif'alo salakim, David HaMelech, with his outburst of declaration of extreme inspiration. Look at the mif'alos of Elohim. Hafach yam li'abasha. He transformed the sea into dry land. But not only that, pasim pasim. Lama. Why? Why did Hashem bring about this miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf with the extra mileage of divvying it up into 12 different paths? And the answer is, Vayisne'u Oso, because of the hatred of the brothers for Yosef. What is going on? If anything, what David HaMelech should have said was, I want to cry and lament over this terrible, tragic event, the hatred of the brothers against Yosef, and they meted him out for death. And instead, David HaMelech says, I can't believe the Neflos Abore. Why is it that the Yamsuf is divided into 12 paths, 12 roads? Because of Ayisnu'u Oso Achiv.
Stop.
Obviously, we're seeing an entirely different approach of Chazal to the sale of Yosef. And I know, Rabosai, it's hard for you, and it's hard for me too, because we're stuck with one particular understanding, the way we were trained from our since we've been babies, and it's very hard to throw all that overboard. But I want you to see a whole new perspective. The most glorious moment, perhaps, in Jewish history is brought about because of the hatred of the brothers for Yosef. Pilei plan, as we'd say, this is unbelievable, it's counterintuitive. But I submit to you, Rabosai, that there's something going on here on a deeper level. And this is the Niflaos Abore. The entire episode, the entire story of Mechiras Yosef should be understood on a different level. This is a divine plan, a divine scheme. And you and I would say for sure that the sinah, the hatred against Yosef, is absolutely corrosive, destructive, but no. This force of Sinas Ha'achim is going to forge 12 Shvat, 12 different tribes. And I would go even further than that. It's not just 12 Shvatim, it's 12 Amim, it's 12 different nations. The Jewish people is made up of 12 different nations. We're kind of United Nations in a microcosm. There are only 12 members of that United Nations, but that's what it is. And I could quote to you psukim after psukim all of Tanakh. I'll just give you a list if you're... I see, Michael, you're writing a little bit, so if you can, write this down. Take a look in Bereishis Lamed Hei Pasuk Yud Aleph. Goy ukahal goyim yiyamimcha. Kahal goyim. We are defined by the Torah as many nations. And you could look up in Bereishis Memches Pasuk Dalet, in Dvarim Lamed Gimel Pasuk Yud Tes, and you'll see this theme over and over again. Am Yisrael is a nation that is an integration, it's a combination, a hybrid of 12 different nations. We are 12 different nations. And it means that every Shevet has its own unique personality, its own way of thinking, and it has evolved its own nationhood to some extent, because we are called the Kahal Goyim. And when, at what point in history were these 12 different nations forged? The answer is at the Sinas HaAchim against Yosef. It's fascinating to me that the Medrash of Chazal says that each one of the Shvatim has slightly different attitude towards Yosef in different madrigas. And some felt that we have to absolutely destroy him, he's a full rodef, and nothing less will do. Others were a little bit more soft about it. But each one, in response to Yosef, had a different understanding and a different worldview. And that's how the 12 Shvatim were forged. And therefore the Arizal says that when we dive into heaven, there are 12 different gates. Each one of those gates of those Shari Shamayim, the gates of heaven, represent a different Shevet, because each and every one of the Shvatim has its own unique way of approaching Hashem. And fascinating is that the Arizal says that every Edah, every part of Klal Yisrael, has its own Nuscha Tefillah, its own way of davening, with its own Nuschos. It has its own Minhagim. And all this, says the Arizal, is reflective of the personality of Klal Yisrael, which is made up of 12 different nations, each one with its own unique way. And as I said to you before, the Sfarno says that there was a decision made by the Shivtei Kah that Yosef had to go. And if you take a look at the Sfarno, which you'll see in the fourth source on your page, the Sfarno asks the question, how is it possible that immediately following Mechiras Yosef, the Pasuk testifies that the Shvatim, these are Shiftei Ka, who are forging the history of Klal Yisrael, the Maisa Avos Simon Lebanim, comes to its apex with regard to the Shiftei Ka, and yet they sit down and they break bread? They eat a Suda? What is it, Isru Chag? What's going on over here? And the amazing thing is that the Sfarno says that they felt no guilt. They had to do what they had to do. They convened the Beis Din. And he decided, Vayeshvu lecha lecha, lo hayel kol ze be'einam takola o mikshol. This was not considered something negative, that therefore they should be prevented, milikva su'udosam, from setting up a meal. They were such great tzaddikim, and this happened. They had to throw Yosef into a pit and extract him and send him off to Egypt. He quotes another parasha in history. How were they able to be so cold and calculated and sit down and eat a suda? Lefisha chashvu es Yosef lerodef. Because they decided that Yosef had a din of a rodef. Rodef is someone that's running after you to kill you. Shekol akodim lahargo zacha. And it's unbelievable. Where else do we find in Jewish history, in Tanakh, and especially in Chumash, where one of the Shvatim has to overcome his natural desire and love to save his brothers of another Shevet, and yet they take out the sword to kill other members of other Shvatim? Which Shevet do I have in mind? Levi, and where Levi?
With the golden calf.
Exactly, after the episode of the Chet HaEgel and Levi, despite the love that they had for their brothers, but there was a din of Misa, there was a psak, that those perhaps 3,000 members of Klal Yisrael who instigated this Avodah Zarah had to be put to death. And it was a kind of a situation in which the Shvatim had to play that role, in this case Levi was at the forefront, to overcome the natural love for his brothers. And if we take a look at this David HaMelech, the way the Medrash presents it, David HaMelech is complimenting the brothers and saying that they have played an amazing role in instituting a sinah, overcoming the natural love for Yosef. And why? Because Yosef, according to the Sfarno, was a rodef, or if you will, the way the Tanchuma presents it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was presiding over the Beis Din and deciding that they had to be put to death. Notice the Medrash of David HaMelech puts no blame on the brothers. There's no statement here in Chazal that the brothers were guilty of sin. On the contrary, the sinner was a means to an end that was planted, as we'll soon see, in the hearts of the brothers by none other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we'll see over and over again how the Mefarshim can't understand how to reconcile. You'll take a look on the other side of your page, this long Malbim. We won't have time to go through the entire Malbim, although we're racing here against the clock. We're trying our best. It's ticking away. We got to stop. Oh,
we didn't have a
quick
question then. So why?
Oh, no.
Have you lost it?
That's it. I lost it.
It's 15 okay. minutes. Just to get...
It probably broke.
When they meet up with Yosef all those years later, why did they suddenly feel... Why did they feel then?
Beautiful.
So
beautiful
feel,
question.
They feel that the, you know,
there was one
down.
Element in their calculation that they weren't aware of. And that we're going to see in just a moment. But keep in the back of your pocket a concept called kibud av. And here's where they made a major mistake, which they only became aware of later after they came back to the father. Again, I'm giving away a lot. But get, what is this whole Malbim about, Rabosa? It's all about freedom of choice. The Malbim can't understand why the brothers were denied freedom of choice. Why did they have to hate Yosef? Why did Hashem plant in their hearts a hatred for Yosef? And then, as a result, we have the whole episode of Bechiras Yosef. Why couldn't the brothers be allowed freedom of choice? What was this divine plan? And we'll see a similar question if you take a look at the fifth source on your page. Vayachlom Yosef chalom. Vayageid le'echav. Vayosif od snow so. Yosef? Very strange.
But after the first chalom, that didn't hate him. Only after the second chalom.
Okay, I don't know, George. We'll try to get to that later if we can. But you know, I'm just trying to. Again, the main question here is not which chalom, but why was Yosef begging them, please listen to my chalomos. Vayomer lehem shimu na hachalom hazeh na is beloshen bakasha asher chalamti. And if you take a look, you'll notice that although according to the Medrash, as we said before, Kriyas Yamsuf was pasim. And why was it pasim? What forged the 12 different tribes of Israel, the Kahal Goyim? It was the Sinas Ha'achim that enveloped, engendered and developed within each one of the Shmatim a personality of its own. But no, what brought about Kriyas Yamsuf itself? Does anybody know? There was one Shevet of all that was responsible for Hashem deciding who was that?
Jumped into the river.
Yosef. Chazal say, Vayonas Yosef. You remember in the story of Eshes Potiphar. And Yosef ran away when she grabbed him. And Chazal say that Vayonas, that because of that Vayonas, the Yamsuf was Nos. The Yamsuf ran away from Klali. So it was Yosef who was the greatest, who brought about the Bizchus Yosef, with the merit of Yosef, we have the Kriyas Yamsuf. But why did the Yamsuf split into 12? That's because of the brothers. But
I don't
here,
understand. If you say that the brothers didn't have a choice, why all the praise for them? I mean, if Hashem put that into their heart, they had that control over that.
Correct. Excellent. So that's going to be the subject of this Malbim. But before we get to the Malbim, I just want you to give you a picture of what Mechiras Yosef is about on a deeper level, not the simple pshat that we're used to, because we read the text and that's what we think about the lowness of the Shvatim, who forged, as I said, Klal Yisrael. And Yosef comes to tell them about the dreams that he had. How could such a thing be? And the answer, says the Ramban, is because Yosef was not just a dreamer. And those were not just dreams. What were they?
Nevuah.
They were Mara HaNevuah. Yeah. And the Mishnah tells us in Sanhedrin, I have a few on the page, Navi HaKovesh Es Nevuaso Misasa Videi Shamayim. If a Navi has a Nevuah that's meant to be transmitted, then his misa, if he fails to do so, is bidei shamayim, a very severe punishment, because a Navi is the messenger of Hashem. And it's interesting that the fundamental difference between the second dream and the first dream, Yosef tells over the first dream to his brothers, and only later, when he has the second dream, he tells his father. What was the difference? Because what element was added to the second dream?
Father.
Yaakov himself, correct. Okay, we'll talk about the Rachel. But Yaakov himself was added. Now Yosef understood that the second dream was a nevuah not just for his brothers, the Acharis Rekokhov, but also for the Shemesh V'Yareach, for his father Yaakov Avinu. And therefore he had to tell the second dream not just to his brothers, but also Yaakov. And the answer is because the Ramban emphasizes that the entire parasha of Yosef is a parasha of Hashgacha Pratis of Hashem. This was part of a nevuah, and it was meant to occur step by step. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Amkus HaEitzo, with a deep, deep, well thought out plan, was bringing about the Mechiras Yosef. And if you take a look in the Pasuk says, Vayelchu Echav. This is in the same Perek Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Yud Beis. Vayelchu Echav Lir'os Es Tzon Avim B'Shechem. It's very interesting that Yaakov Avinu is not mentioned here. Who is mentioned? At least by implication, maybe Yosef. Not explicitly. Yosef is mentioned. I don't know if Yosef is mentioned. There are two ways of describing the brothers and the Shvatim. One is B'nai Yaakov, or Achei Yosef. It's very fascinating that in this parasha, the terminology used by the Torah is not B'nai Yaakov, but Achiv, Echav Shel Yosef. This entire parasha, my friends, from beginning to end, is about Yosef. In fact, even the digression, whatever you want to call it, in the middle of this long parasha with regard to Yehuda and Tamar, even that's about Yosef. And how do I know such a thing? Because the pasuk says about Yehuda that Vayered Yehuda Me'echav, and if you take a look at the next to last source on your page, Rashi says Lama Nismuchu Parsha Zu Kan. Hifsik b'parshaso shel Yosef l'lamed shahoridu echav migdulaso. That they lowered Yehuda from his pinnacle. Stature, from his pinnacle, as the almost like the king of the Shvatim. Yehuda went down. And why did Yehuda go down? After all, if this was a psak bezdin, and if HaKadosh Baruch Hu presided that Yosef had to be sold, then why is it that Yehuda is feeling so guilty? And I think the answer to this question is the answer to your question from before. And that is, if the brothers, as the Sfarno says, had decided that Yosef had to go, they paskin that he was a rodef, why were they able to eat bread with, you know, a cold, callous, calculated a feeling that they didn't do any evil, and yet they do such tshuva of lashemim anachnu, and this whole parsha is about tshuva. Is the answer is, and we go back to Yehuda, shero b'tzaras avihem. What they didn't take into consideration was the tzaras avihem. Had you told us, Yehuda, to return Yosef to his father, instead of telling us to sell him, we would have listened to you. You were the head of the tribes. And they wanted to point the guilt and shift the guilt over to Yehuda, because he, as the leader of the Shvatim, should have known better. But nobody anticipated what would happen in terms of Yaakov's tragic grief and mourning, which really never ended. And therefore that element was left out of the equation. But Rabosai, I want to ask you the following question. How many parashios do we have in the Torah that are dedicated to this episode and the history and the life of Yosef? I count at least four. From Vayeshev, basically all the way to Vayechi, we're going to have parshios that deal with Yosef.
Yeah.
And we don't really find that much about the rest of the Shvatim in terms of their private lives. A little bit here and a little bit there. But in terms of the life of Yosef, the Torah dedicates so much, perhaps a third or more of Sefer Bereishis is dedicated to Yosef. And here I want to point out the Archaim HaKadosh. If you look, it's the fourth source up from the bottom of your page. The Archaim HaKadosh says, Ki Yosef hu b'uchinas Yaakov. Yosef is the replacement for Yaakov. U'b'madregas av l'shvatim yikore. He too has the status of an av. How many avos do we have, says the Archaim? Not three, but four. The fourth av is Yosef. U'lazelo hilbish ha-nevuah b'shar bonov. We only find that Yosef received the nevuah of the chalomos, and Yosef dedicated the next part of his life to see to it that those chalomos and that nevuah would come to fruition, and Yosef came up with a very complicated plan and an arrangement in order to make sure, to guarantee that the chalomos would come to fruition. Ulazed dikdek lomar shnei bonecha lihem. Yaakov Avinu turns to Ephraim Menashe and says, Yosef, your two sons lihem, they're mine, pirish b'madregas b'nei Yaakov. In other words, just like Yaakov Avinu has shvatim, so too Yosef has shvatim. Yosef is the father of two shvatim. Why ki hare Yosef b'madregas av ki Yaakov? Yosef has the status of an av. And therefore, the greatness of Yosef is such that he is the next chain, the next link in the chain from Yaakov Avinu. And we started with the pasuk v'Yisrael av es Yosef mikol banov ki ben zkunim hulo. Who is Yosef? Ben zkunim. What is ben zkunim? Says Rashi, ben zkunim shenolad lo leisik naso. But then he says, the uncle is tirgeim bar chokim hule. That zikna here means chachma, it doesn't mean old age. It means that Yaakov passed on his chachma to whom?
To Yosef.
Yosef was singled out. Koma shalomad nishem v'yever masalo. Yosef was handpicked by his father for the Mesiras HaTorah, for the transmission of Torah. The Ramban embellishes this beautifully in the fifth source on your page. Says the Ramban, Zos kavanosim v'yomrim kol mashalomad mishem v'yever masalo, whatever he had studied at the feet of Shem v'yever Yaakov transmitted to Yosef. Lomar, what does this mean? Says the Ramban. Shem masalo chachmos. He gave him all the entire, shall we say, the entire configuration of Chachma, of wisdom, Sisrei Torah, the secrets of Torah. Umatzo maskil, and he found that Yosef was a maskil. Imagine Yosef is 17 years old, a young man at the time of the Mechira, but yet Yaakov had succeeded in pumping into Yosef all of his Torah. Ubal sod b'hem, and even the secrets of the Torah. And Yosef could be described as Ben Zkunim, ki ilu ayazaken v'rav yomim. He was mature and wise, way beyond his years. So Rabbo said, let's just look at what we're seeing.
This could be a problem of Yaakov, no?
Well, it doesn't mean that it's Yaakov's at fault here, because, again, the whole process of creating and forging Klal Yisrael is deciding who would be in charge of the next generation. And on the one hand, we could have said that all Shivtei Ka are equal and the distribution is Shavu B'Shavu is uniform. But from the perspective, at least of the Archaim HaKadosh, you see that Yosef was hand-picked and he rose to the level of an Av. And he had the Nevuah, and that's why he insisted and persisted that the Achim should listen to the Nevuah, because a Navi shekavash his Nevuah sos chayv misi, he must share his Nevuah and transmit it. All these parashios from Vayeshev and on are dedicated to the fourth Av, namely to Yosef. And why? Because Yosef is a Ben Zkunim, he's the Av. He's the individual about which the Torah is going to give us so much insight and share with us so much about his personality. because it's critical to understand who Yosef is. And finally, I'd like to share with you the insights of the Malbim. The Malbim, and you'll see this on the third line of the paragraph, the Malbim dwells on a very, very strange pasuk. The pasuk, which is in the bottom of your page 1, which describes Yisrael, meaning Yaakov, sending Yosef to his brothers in Shechem, Lecha v'eshlecha aleihem, v'yomer lo hineini. Now keep in mind, Yaakov is aware of the dangers that are involved in Shechem. I mean, to this day, it's a dangerous place to go to. V'yomer lo lechna re'ei eshlom achecha, etc., etc. And it says, v'yishlecheu me'emek chevron. So Rashi asks the obvious question. What do you mean, Emek Chevron? Chevron is not in a valley, and Emek is a low place. Chevron is higher. Ella, what is the meaning of Emek Chevron, says Rashi? The Amko Eitza Amuka Shal Oso Tzadik HaKover BeChevron. There's an entire process going on here. A divinely inspired, step-by-step unfolding of history, in which every step of the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu is calculating how to bring about the fulfillment of the Eitzah Amuka that he gave to Avram Avinu when he said to Avram at the Bris Bein HaBesorim, Ki Geri Yezaracha. It means that Yaakov had to go down to Mitzrayim. And Chazal tell us that really he was roid to go down to Mitzrayim Bishar Shaos Shal Barzel, because he was going to be taken captive and taken away from the land of Israel down to Mitzrayim. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu had rachmanis that it wasn't appropriate for the Av, for Yaakov Avinu, to go down in chains. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw another way of seeing to it that this prophetic promise to Avram Avinu would come to fulfillment, to fruition, and that would be through Mechiras Yosef, so that Yaakov would come down to Mitzrayim willingly to see his son. But if this entire chain of events was brought about by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where's the Bechira Chofshis? Where is the freedom of choice?
Yeah. The 10 martyrs, where there's a whole thing.
He
goes up to heaven and says, do we deserve this punishment? God says, yes, it's because of the fate of the Bechira of Yosef.
So, right, there's no question, Michael, that there's an element of sin here, but the question is how to understand the sin. The pashtus, the way that's again, I'm just blaming myself because this is the way I was raised from childhood. You know, I learned Chumash when I was in fourth grade, so what did I know any better? And they just taught me that the Achim were jealous, and this was petty jealousy, and there was a lack of communication. You know, I've heard all the explanations. I just want to make you aware of a different approach. It doesn't mean that I'm Shivim Panim LaTorah. The Torah can be understood in 70 different ways. But the sinner itself is something that was implanted in the hearts of the brothers for a very good reason. It was necessary to forge different, shall we call it, hashkafot. I don't know if you're familiar with the fancy word, Weltanschauung. You know, every shevet has its own worldview. And this began, and was the seeds were planted at this episode of Mechiras Yosef.
You're strengthening the question. If this was implanted in them, Then there was a Beis Din, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu was in charge of the Beis Din. Where's the chet?
So again, right now we're saying it's not a chet at all. In fact, if there was a chet, why does the Medrash tell us that this wonderful miracle in its particular form of Kriyas Yamsuf, you know, pasim form, came about because of the sinner? Obviously, the sinner is positive and not negative. There's no mention in the Medrash of Chet. You know, it's when David HaMelech wants to point out the greatness and the wonders of God, he points to the sin of the Achim. I mean, if the sin of Achim is to be viewed as something negative, as something derogatory and a big sin, which a grave sin that we are familiar with, why does that become Niflos HaBoreh? And as you'll soon see, the Akedah, who lived about, the Baal Akedah, he was the author of a sefer called Akedah Yitzchak, he lived almost 5 centuries ago, he's quoted here by the Malbim, he also understood in this light, and we'll see the Malbim also, that the sinner was implanted in the hearts of the Achim, and it was all part of a prophecy that had to be fulfilled because of the Eitzar Muka back in Chevron, George.
In what way is Yosef a rodef?
Yosef is a rodef because he wants to destroy the brothers. What does that mean, he wants to destroy the brothers? Again, on a level of prophecy, it seems like Yosef is the enemy of the brothers. Because what's happening here, as a result of Yosef bringing Dibasam Ra, Yaakov Avinu wants to put the other brothers into Cherem. Now, when I say Cherem, it doesn't mean, like somebody said to me last week in our Brachashir, one of our doctors here said to me, well, we're not going to give him Shishi. That's not what I'm talking about. We're talking about a spiritual Cherem, in which Yaakov Avinu was of the opinion that the brothers were guilty of crimes. And all this came about through Dibasam Ra. Now again, if we had more time, in the light of the fact that Yosef was such a great tzaddik, and he's one of the others, why did he bring Dibasam Ra to Yaakov Avinu? And why didn't Yaakov convene some sort of family get-together? I don't know if you have that in your families. Most of the time they don't work, but sometimes they even boomerang. But convene a family get-together, and let's flesh this out. Let's discuss this. Are the brothers guilty of a crime? Are they not guilty of a crime? And let's work that out.
There was a whole thing about Eva Menachai, wasn't there? There was a whole thing about it.
Correct. When they were guilty of Eva Menachai, you know, the Parshas Shochem says that there was a machlokas exactly what din they had. Did they have a din of a Ben Noach, a din of Yisrael?
Exactly.
It becomes complicated. But the point is that we shouldn't understand this whole parsha on a very superficial level. There are approaches to this parsha which will derail us from everything that we used to in the past, and to see it in a different light, to start with the premise that Yosef is a tzaddik, that the brothers are trying to forge Klal Yisrael. This is the critical moment, or shall we call it the crossroads, in the history of Knesset Yisrael that began way back in Parshas Lech Lecha and is going to culminate in Parshas Vayechi in the Kahal Amim, when we are a merger of 12 different nations. And you'll ask me the question, well, why do we have to be 12 different nations? And the answer is because the greatness, the glory is that each member, each shevet has its own personality, its own character. It brings different midos. You know, that's what Yaakov Avinu and Moshe Rabbeinu later in Vizel Sambrach is going to emphasize, the unique midos of each one of the Shvatim. And again, these are very deep concepts in mysticism, at the significance of the number 12 and why that forms the perfect, you know, the perfect wholeness of a unit. And it's a result of combining and merging 12 different midos. And where did those midos begin to develop? Way back at the story of... So it's interesting, you know, there's a very famous Netziv. This is on the side. Again, if you have to go, just tell me you have to go. But the Netziv has this whole perspective on marriage. The Pasuk says, Ezer Kenegdo. You remember that Pasuk? And the Netziv says in his Pirush al Torah, which is called Hamek Dover, but he has Harchei Dover on the bottom where he embellishes it, that a person should merit having an Ezer who's Kenedo. And it's a very paradoxical concept. On the one hand, she's an Ezer, you know, she's meant to be a helpmate. On the other hand, she's Kenedo. She really literally fights you and confronts you. But when there's a confrontation, the greatest unity comes from that, what's called, again, if you don't mind my quoting some of the German philosophers, it's called Hegelian dialectics, in which you have thesis, antithesis, and then you forge some sort of whole. I mean, Hegel himself was really standing on the shoulders of the ancient Greeks. If you've ever heard of Heraclitus, who's one of the Greek philosophers, he used to talk about the river and how there's a tension in the river, and that's what creates the power of the river. And that dialectic is what really generates a perfect whole. And where did that dialectic, that confrontation of Kenegdo, begin? With the Sinas HaAchim. So you and I say that the sin of Sachem is the most terrible thing, and there definitely is, you know, room to draw that conclusion. But I claim that this message gives you the opposite approach, that the sin of Sachem is what forges Klal Yisrael. There's a certain kinegdo philosophy in which the different midos, which represent that whole perfect ideal whole, and again, if I can quote Plato, you know, Plato has this whole idea of the ideals and the ideas up in the heavens, so to speak, and that whole is you're familiar with the Gestalt philosophy, which is that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. You know, when you add the parts together, you create a new whole that's even greater than just arithmetic adding of the whole. So that all took place at the birth of the Shiftei Ka in Sinas Ha'achim. And therefore, the Akedah wants to know if this Sinah was a deliberate divine decision. So what happened to Bechira Chafshis? And the Eitzah Mukasher Bechevron, that this was all to bring about the fulfillment of the prophecy of back in the Bris Fein of Sontav Avraham Avinu. And on the third line of the Malbim, before he quotes the Akedah, he says, "Shemiderach Hatevel Ohayo Roy SheYakov Yishlach Yeled Shashuim LeMakom Sakana." Does it make any bit of sense logically? Again, if you read this parsha on a superficial level, that Yaakov would have made a decision to send Yosef into a dangerous area. And not only that, the Malbim claims that Yaakov was aware of the friction between Yosef and his brothers. I don't think Yaakov was aware of the fact that they had judged him as a Rodev. I don't think Yaakov knew that. But he definitely...
They were sat while he was actually coming.
Correct. But Yaakov knew that there was enmity there. There was a sinus achim. And therefore, how could he send Yosef and expose him to such danger? You know, sometimes, you know, you live on a level of miracles, but for a father to send his son into the lion's den and expose him to danger, ain't some canal a ness. Echlo hisyari mishloch es Yosef haholich levado bimokom oivim v'arvim. Arvim might be the animals or the enemies, and oivim are probably the brothers themselves. And here's the turning point, if you can underline the next five words. Rakshahoya Siba Meis Hashem. Siba means a cause, right? We have a concept of causality. The element here of causality is not on the natural level, but on the metaphysical level. Supernatural. This was Hashem's decision that this had to happen. It was Eitzar Muka, every step in the process. And therefore Yosef has to go down to his brothers against all odds, against all logic. And here the Malbim quotes the Akedah, and he says, "Umasha Amru Chazal b'Chayotzim Zemora." He wants to suggest that perhaps this is going to change our understanding as it was formulated by the Akedah. Meaning, what he's going to do now, the Malbim is going to present the thesis of the Akedah, and he's going to disagree with the Akedah. The Akedah says, and I again, if I were you, I'd underline these words that philosophically they're mind-boggling. He says, I would circle, as I did, the word kololim in my edition. There's a general goal or destiny that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to bring about, and history is leading step by step to the achievement and the fulfillment of that destiny. That's called kololim. The Efshal Yodom Levatlon, and man is not granted freedom or power to undermine the Kolim, you know, the ultimate purpose of mind. But Mikomokom Hanyonim Achelkim, but nevertheless, the parts, the individual parts, step by step, that leads up to the Kolim, Kulam Nisharim Lebechiris Adam, all that is left to man's freedom of choice. In other words, what the Akedah presents is the following thesis. Man has freedom of choice at every step, but ultimately, no matter what man decides, he's falling into a divine plan. And the fulfillment, the fruition of that divine plan is guaranteed. But man is still granted freedom of choice in the pratim, in the details, in the chelkim, in the step-by-step process. So you and I make decisions on a daily basis, but you have to know, and I have to know, that ultimately what's going to happen is that God's purpose is going to be fulfilled. That is the paradox of what we call of what we call freedom of choice. That on the one hand, God is calling the shots, but on the other hand, man has freedom of choice. That's the way the Akedah presents it. Says the Malbin, if you learn the parsha of Akedah, of Mechiras Yosef carefully, you will come to a conclusion that is fundamentally different than that of the Akedah. Vani Omer, if you fast forward a few lines, because we're limited in time. Sha'af hakdama bi'atzma amitasi, even though the general introduction or the overview of the Akedah is absolutely correct. V'inyono Tori, it's a Torah fundamentally yisodistika hare kodesh, it's rooted and anchored in the kedusha, the sanctity of the Torah. And therefore, for example, the Akedah is right that the Mitzrim, in punishing the Jewish people, were part of a divine plan, and yet they were punished for that. And why are they punished? Because the Chelkim, right, the step-by-step process is given to freedom of choice. So on the one hand, you know, the Egyptians are oppressing and tormenting the Jewish people as part of a divine plan, but that's only...
They went overboard.
Right, but they on the day by day level, in terms of their implementation, they were given freedom of choice and therefore held responsible for that. Mikoma, come again, skipping a line for a second. Po, here in Mechiras Yosef, and I would underline these words, Gam ha'emtsayim, even the step by step process, Lo hayu mechirim, were not given to freedom of choice. Vayakulo me'es Hashem. It's all from Hashem. And he says that Yaakov sending Yosef down to Shechem to his brothers, it is not a decision that Yaakov made implementing his freedom of choice. This is a very bad thing to do, but Hashem wanted it. Because if Yaakov Avinu had freedom of choice, then we have a principle called Haba L'tayr Messiah also. If Yaakov has his best interest is to bring about the protection of Yosef as a reflection of his love for Yosef, then certainly Hashem would have helped him to do so. And here it's just the opposite. It's a terrible thing that's going to happen. And therefore he goes on to present to you the Malbim, if you have a chance to go through it all. Gam, there's a line that starts with the words Vizos Shenis, if you see. Shahagam Shah Maisa Shalabhira Haisa Bakhirius Nikomakom Hasina Shesanuoso Umasha Osalo of Ksonis Pasin Visipure Achalomos Shoyu Em Tsoyim Elamachira Haya Me Ace Hashem. He says that the hatred and the enmity that was harbored in the hearts of the Shvatim against Yosef, that's all Me'es Hashem. He says the fact that Yaakov Avinu had this Ksonis Pasin made and given to Yosef was Me'es Hashem. The relating of the dreams to the brothers by Yosef was Me'es Hashem. And it was all because of the Emek Chevron. What is Emek Chevron? He says that itself is part of a divine process. And here's where the Malbim presents the following paradox. Man is granted freedom of choice, and if he misuses and abuses it, he will be punished. But nevertheless, at least at certain episodes in history, the entire sequence of events is set into motion and brought about by divine supervision, by Hashgacha. It's unbelievable. On the one level, even the details are, and the step-by-step process is part of a conduit, a means to an end. And on the other hand, at the same time, there is Bechira Chofshis, there is freedom of choice.
Where is the freedom of choice?
And what is that freedom of choice? The freedom of choice, he says, Hagam Shah Maisa Shal HaMechira Haisa Bechiris, the ultimate decision and the action that they implemented to sell Yosef was done out of freedom, but it was engendered by a sinah that was planted in the hearts of the brothers by a Kaddish Baruch. So how much punishment could they really deserve? You understand my question, Michael? If you look at the whole perspective...
I agree. So what's the answer?
So the answer is that the punishment is going to be very limited. It's going to be punishment, again, this is not in the Malbim, but just on the basis of all the other sources that we saw, the punishment will be a result not of the decision of the brothers based on the sin that was planted in their hearts to sell Yosef, but it was a punishment because of their lack of sensitivity in the context of Kibbud Av to the anguish that they caused their father. And I'd like to show you something very fascinating with this. Well, maybe we take a break. And that is, take a look at Pasuk Yud Beis in our parasha. So we're in Perek Lamed Zayin. Our whole discussion has been in Perek Lamed Zayin. And in Pasuk Yud Beis, which you'll see right smack in the middle of your page, it says, Vayelchu Echav Liros Esson Aviyah Bishchem. Now, what you and I don't see on this page is that there's a dot above the word S. That's part of the Mesorah. It's a tradition that we know that above the word S, there's a dot. Now, a dot is sort of like a partial separation between what this word, which is dotted on top, and the next word that comes after it. And basically what it does is, it takes the word S and connects it to the previous word. Usually S is a conjunction that leads to the next word. But in this case, you have to read the pasuk on two different levels. And on the level of the tradition of the os, excuse me, of the nekuda, the tson, the word tson, is a new paragraph, so to speak, or a new sentence within a sentence. And therefore you have to separate and ask yourself the questions, Vayelchu echav liros. S. Stop. Take a stop. I don't know if you remember the old days when they had telegrams. Stop, you remember? So there's a stop here. Says Rashi, and this you'll see the third source before the end of your page, Liros Esson Nakud al S. There's an akuda over the word S, which means, forget about the rest of the pasuk. The rest of the pasuk is going to give a whole different answer to the question, why did they go to Shechem to graze their animals? And the answer to that question, again on one level, this is without the Nekuda, is Avihem. What does the word Avihem indicate? Which mitzvah in the Torah? When it says Tzon Avihem, they did it for their father. Kibbud Av. Says Rashi, Nakud es al es, lo holchu elo liros es atzma. In other words, the reason they did this is because they were interested in themselves. Let me try to explain. I think what's going on here is that there are two purposes and two goals of the brothers going out there to graze their tzon. On one level, they did it because of Kibbud Av. It was Tzon Aviyah. They were in charge of the flocks and the possessions of their father. That's what their father wanted them to do. And that was definitely a key of Kibbud Av. But on another level, they were interested in themselves. They didn't have a full flip. You see, Kibbud Av means when you're doing something for the pure motive of respect for your father, respect for your mother. Here, there was an integration of personal motives. Their Kibbud Av level was not up to par. And what's going to follow after this is Mechiras Yosef. And perhaps we could suggest that had their Kibbud Av been total and complete and pure, had it been 100% unadulterated, had it been Esom Aviyam, they never would have sold Yosef. Because in the midst of Kibbud Av would have protected them, would have intensified their love and their sensitivity for their father. And how could they go ahead and sell Yosef? But at this point, they were a little bit clouded in their decision-making process. There was a combination of Kibbud Av, for sure, this is the shift they call. But on their level, again, this is something that's only the Nekuda above the S could reveal to us, on some level, what we call Bedake Dakus, you know, something subtle that you and I probably wouldn't have even been aware of. The greats of our Shvatim were not totally dedicated to Kibbud Av. Perhaps had they dedicated themselves to Kibbud Av, that mitzvah would have uplifted them above and beyond Mechiras Yosef. So because they were a little bit involved in their own selves, and their own self-interest, and motivated not to do the mitzvah, which this mitzvah could have been done totally for Kibbud Av, but there was an admixture of some other factors, so the Kibbutz Av was lacking. That's how I think Rashi has to be understood. You'll take a look in the Sifsei Chachamim here. He has a whole discussion about this Rashi. I'm not sure if he's saying the same thing we are, but in that case, now the stage is set for Mechiras Yosef. On the one hand, again, there's a very paradoxical, subtle situation here. The sin against the Achim is planted in their hearts. According to the Malbin, for one, they don't even have Bechira on that. And why did Hashem plant the sinner? As we saw, that's going to forge 12 different shvatim, each shaver with its own kenegdo, its own personality, its own uniqueness. And on the second hand, this is all part of a divine plan to get Yosef down to Mitzrayim and ultimately to bring Yaakov down to Mitzrayim. That's going to begin the golus of Ger Yezaracha that was promised and foretold to Avram. But on the other hand, as the Malbim says, the Bechira Chofshis took place when they decided to sell Yosef, and that itself, although it was part of a divine plan, leaves a certain element of, shall we say, guilt or incompletion in that decision. The sin itself was divinely inspired or generated, but the Mechira was their decision, utilizing their freedom of choice, or abusing, if you will, their freedom of choice. And what you'll see in the Psukim, which we don't have time for now, is that when they became aware of the terrible anguish and suffering of their father, that's when they decided to do tshuva. Other than that, as the Sfarno said, they were cold and calculated about it. They could sit down and eat a meal. They felt that they were doing the mitzvah, just like later in history, as we saw, Levi is going to do their mitzvah and have to mete out the death penalty to their own brothers because of the, in the wake of the sin of the Chet HaEgel, of the great Chet HaEgel.
You could say that actually they were taking into account Kid of Ain because they considered that he was a Rodeh, and because they considered that he was spitting out the family. Right. They were trying to protect Yaakov and the Shvatim. They were actually doing absolutely the right thing.
Correct. And that's another approach to explain why they were in such a bind. On the one hand, they were absolutely convinced that this was a divine decision. Hashem was presiding. They had a real bezdin. The verdict was handed down. It was a decision that was unanimous. Yosef had to go. On the other hand, even though certainly Yaakov would have to come along and this would be part of what Yaakov Avinu ultimately would be happy with, but to gauge the anguish of a father, and he was unconsolable. I mean, Chazal say that even though, you know, there's a rule that after 12 months you forget the mess, but in the case of Yosef, Yaakov was not consoled. He was unconsolable. Again, they have different explanations for that. One is because Yosef was still alive. But we have another explanation here, because Yaakov Avinu, it was unpredictably, what word am I looking for? Not eternal, but the infinite, right? The infinite love of Yaakov for Yosef. Believing with every part of his heart and soul that Yosef was the next Av, passing on, as it were, the entire corpus of the Torah with all its sodos to Yosef, so that he would forge Klal Yisrael. Now Yosef is gone. That's something that even the Achim, with all their greatness, were not able to gauge, and they didn't have their finger on the pulse. And in that sense, they perhaps failed. But again, the sinner itself, and that's the chiddush of what we're discussing today, was not some sort of low, superficial, natural hatred or jealousy. He got the ketonus passim and so forth and so on. But it was on a deeper level, part of what we call the Eitza Muka of Chevron, the same Eitza Muka that forces, so to speak, Yaakov into the same Yosef down to Shechem against all logical explanations. The same Eitz HaMuka that creates a chain of events that's so bizarre, where Yosef should tell his chalomos to his brothers, but the answer is that this is a divine plan, and Yosef wants to get the brothers to prepare for this. If now is the moment of time in which the promise to our grandfather, I should say our great grandfather, Avram Avinu Kigerius, is about to take place, so Yosef says to his brothers, let's see how we can prepare ourselves for this. And later on we'll see that Yehuda played a major role in preparing for the Golas. You know, he set up the yeshiva outside Goshen and so forth and so on. But it was all part of a divine plan. I'm sure there are tons of other proofs to this, but this is what I was able to come up with.
All right, Shkar, thank you so much.